Hey everyone, Sabrina here. TheTribe.co.uk welcomes the very endearing Joseph Crawford to our Tribecast interview.
Hi guys.
Joseph originally took on the role of Daryl within Series 5 of The Tribe, a lovable performer who only wanted his moment to shine. With a sarcastic wit and a ready smile, Daryl is someone who is easily approachable, but underneath it all, he just wanted some form of acceptance.
It's great to be able to sit down and revisit some of the unforgettable period of my life making The Tribe Series 5 and trying to tackle this very unusual character of Daryl. I'm sure the fans have had lots of questions over the years, and I hope I can answer some of them.
Joseph, what was it like not only having to come into an already established cast, crew, and show, but then to be immediately thrown into having to play such an iconic villain in the form of Zoot? Did you find any of it a daunting experience at all? And did you talk to Danny about all the mannerisms and expressions of Zoot? Or was that something that you studied and forged it yourself?
Well, to be honest, it was a struggle coming into the show and not knowing exactly what I was doing with this character. I came into a series that was already being made. The first few episodes had been shot when I arrived in New Zealand and got set up there. So I came into a production that was sort of already on the road and very, very focused and very fast-paced production. So there wasn't a lot of time to really even meet with anyone like Danny. Danny was actually working part-time on the crew on this Series 5, as well as making some appearances as Zoot, because Danny was also interested in the working on the other side of the camera, as many performers end up doing at some stage. So I didn't know Danny James. I knew some of the other actors, like Antonia, from previous television work that I'd done, and Beth. I very much came into an existing family. That was the feeling. They'd been on the road, making the show for 4 years. So they'd been on this journey together. And I was at that point, because you can't see the whole series in advance. I was just coming in as a guest character. I had no idea to what extent I'd actually be involved in the series, if it was just a small, period of time. And so that was not all revealed to me up front. I came into this experience thinking, well, I don't exactly look like this, like Danny James. I'd, of course, done homework and looked at the other episodes and realized Zoot was an important, iconic character. But perhaps I didn't realize to the extent of how important he was to the fans at the time. So, and that's probably a good thing, because I probably would have felt immense pressure and would have driven me insane, especially not having clear direction on how much should I imitate Zoot? How convincing should Daryl be? Is he is part of his character intended to be kind of like a failure at playing Zoot, since he seems to have a kind of a lofty sort of deluded opinion of his abilities, but at the same time, parts of the script were written in such a way that you knew he had to be convincing enough as Zoot to fool a lot of people. So I sort of had to fill in the blanks in between this more comical, deluded character that couldn't quite pull things off the way he envisioned, someone who was, out of so many people, their choice to go out and fool people into thinking I was the real Zoot. So that part was a little bit hazy and unclear. And I even found with the writing that Daryl was written different ways in different episodes, and that would get more and more confusing as things went on. But also, great acting challenge. I thought was nice to have such an unpredictable character, unpredictable for me and unpredictable for the audience. And I had to, over time, figure out who this guy was. Was he you know, simply a clown? Was he, you know, some sort of, you know, cheese ball? Or were there deeper aspects to him? To what? How sensitive should I play this guy? He certainly seemed to flip flop between being very fearful and having much bravado. But I generally found, as the series went on, that Daryl's character, who uses this bravado purely as a shield, disguising the fact that actually he's not so socially skilled. He's not super socially smooth. He has a lot of naivety and probably has a lot of pain and isolation, but like many, comedians or people in the performing arts with a sort of manic personality, often are much loved performers, like say Robin Williams, would use their talents to sort of cover and wash over a lot of their pain and sensitivity. So that's the direction the character ended up going in the end. At the beginning, we had like only, you'd only see 7 episodes at a time. They would release the scripts in sort of blocks. So yeah, I came in very confusing atmosphere, felt like an outsider, but that worked for the character. Felt like I was being rushed into suddenly having to figure out who this character was and then put the other layer of playing Zoot on top of this character, and actually have to live up to this legacy in such a short period of time. But all that confusion, I think, worked for where the character was at as well. He was a complete fish out of water, and he was sort of plucked from nowhere and sort of forced into being this icon, this mascot, and this key element in the deception that Mega and was trying to weave at the time. And I of course, at the beginning, I had no idea what direction they were going to take Daryl, or whether he was going to be a short-lived character. Although I had a feeling it wasn't going to be that way, because I knew I had several months scheduled filming on the show, but you just don't know what direction the writing is going to go. It was a very confusing experience, and I just hope that worked for the character in the end. Yeah.
The character of Daryl was quite impressionable, not only taking comments to heart, but someone who could be easily led, as we witnessed on occasion with his encounters with Slade and Lex. Do you share any similarities with the character at all? And what would you say are Daryl's best and worst qualities?
Ooh, as much as I would like to say that I don't share anything with this bizarre character, who's lovable in the end, maybe, but very pathetic at times and very deluded at times, I have to admit to a few things. Well, the first being sensitivity. I think that especially at the time, I was only about 19 when I was doing The Tribe. So I was, still just a young person and, had lots of my own insecurities, on the table as well. I was not the popular person in school. I was definitely a weirdo, definitely outcast, and definitely only had small circles of friends that, were either, geeks or, people interested in the arts or, had lots of friendships with people older than me. I found it much easier to talk to adults. So, I think definitely on the sensitivity level, I was a lot similar to Daryl. And I think maybe even the way I chose to portray him, having all this bravado as a cover for a more sensitive side, might have influenced the writing of the character in the future. Or maybe they perhaps just had it all mapped out from the start, and I just picked up what was there. I'm not sure. I would like to think that I'm, not as easily taken in as Daryl was, like gullible, impressionistic, but there was probably that side of me. I think definitely the flip side of having a character that might be considered naive in that he takes people at their word a lot. The good side of that is that when they speak about them to a trusted person, or they tend to want to speak honestly as well. That would be another positive thing I think that I share with the character, if you look at it in that light, is that I tend to find it hard to lie to people. I mean, unless it's professional lying, like acting, that's sort of a different kind of thing altogether. But in my daily life, directly with people, I find it almost impossible to lie. And I think Daryl shared that as well, apart from the whole show he had put on when he was talking to people who were in his inner circle. He was always direct and upfront. I mean, apart from those times where he's deluded about himself, he tended to be an honest character underneath it all. And I think believing in telling the truth about yourself can sometimes, unfortunately, be coupled with the downside, which is that you tend to take people at their word without sort of filtering it and kind of rethinking what that might be about. So yeah, one of his better qualities would be the honesty and loyalty. So the integrity of the character underneath all of his annoying characteristics. So he's a really well-meaning character. And then unfortunately, he has this whole idea of himself as a showman, which is interesting because it's like a both well-placed and not well-placed in that, you know, he has some talent, but he doesn't have the level of self-awareness to really pull it off. He always comes off a little over the top, a little cheesy, a little forced, incredibly vain. You know, he ends up being very self-involved. That comes back to the sensitivity. And yeah, like I said before, he lacks social finesse and has delusions of grandeur. So definitely both kind of all those things can lead to mental instability when you have a character who's so sort of vulnerable on the inside that has this whole front. And that was interesting for me because although I would never say that I'm like Daryl, or on that level of delusion, I could start to see things about myself in him. I could see that I was someone who saw themselves as a great performer, but was also aware enough to have the pain of knowing that I wasn't quite pulling it off in the way that I would want to. And what I mean by that is I lacked certain social finesse. I've, you know, always been a more introverted person than I would probably need to be to actually go and do the things that I wanted to do, especially as a young person. I think sort of my goals in life have changed over the years, but in that young person phase, I was still very much a showman around that time. I think Daryl, underneath it all, has some sense that he's not going to quite be able to manage, even if he has the raw talent to do something, that he is always going to struggle with fitting into such a socially demanding skill set, you know? So I probably didn't even realize to at that time what I was learning about myself from playing the character.
It's quite hard not to notice Daryl, and indeed yourself, because he is a natural-born orator with a great tone to his voice, able to project his voice expertly and command a lot of attention when he speaks. Do you personally possess a background in theater, or did you engage in any vocal training? Have you ever considered becoming a voiceover artist?
Oh, wow, that's so nice to hear. And it's actually such a great time for me to be asked that question because I'm at this juncture of life where there's some other career and hobby options that I wanted to explore. And actually, funnily enough, voiceover work and podcasting perhaps is something that I want to get into. Whether it will be in the form of a hobby or whether it will be a sort of a branch of my professional career remains to be seen. When I was young, I was absolutely passionate and addicted to sort of playing around with my voice, taking on different character affectations, accents, different cartoony voices, and trying to make different sounds with my voice was just something that I did in my spare time. You know, this is what I love to do. And it was a big part of acting for me, is just using my voice and getting different sounds out there. And when I think about it in retrospect, it might be even something more suited to me than, you know, traditional acting. I have always loved the performing arts and film and stage from a very early age. They had such a massive impression on me. So I wanted to replicate the experience of wonder I had when watching a film or something on stage. So as a kid, as well as doing all these vocal characters, I was constantly trying to recreate plays in the living room, trying to involve my poor little brother in them, who was sort of like happy to be a pawn in whatever I was creating at the time. Or maybe he wasn't happy about it, but he learned to be passionate about it, I guess, just from hanging around with me and having to grow up with my craziness. But another huge part of it is I wanted to recreate the experience of doing something creative that could be played back, that was, that wasn't live, but that once you'd finished it was kind of a work of art into itself. This is like my early inclination towards filmmaking. And of course, we didn't have cameras or a means for me to record things visually when I was really young. So the first thing I could do to create that sort of experience was do things like make audio plays using the tape deck or recreate storybooks. So I would do things like, either invent my own stories, or I'd recreate the Calvin and Hobbes comics on tape with a friend, or sometimes just on my own. And I think I started into doing the whole Tintin series, but didn't get through them all, of course. And this would be using sort of sound effects I would make at home, maybe with, spoons and a pan to make a sort of a glass crashing sound. Or I would start to collect libraries of sound effects and music and, would just dub them tape to tape over with the microphone plugged in. Very old-fashioned way of making homemade radio plays. So I'm so excited about the chance to really develop something that was a very, very early passion for me and a key part of who I am. In terms of training, I did a lot of theater in school, and we used to do lots of vocal exercises. I was a singer as a young child and often did sort of solo or choir performances over the various years of school. I did a whole bunch of theater courses and a couple of acting for screen courses, both here and in Canada. I did a short course also in Toronto at the National Institute of Broadcast just for aspiring voiceover artists early in my career.
It's such a shame that we only get to see Daryl in the final series of the show, as it felt that there was a heck of a lot of development potential available for the character. Is there anything that you wished you could have done with Daryl? Any story arcs that you would have liked to tackled? And were you aware of any future storylines for the character if Series 6 had indeed gone ahead?
Yeah, Daryl is definitely a fascinating character that could sort of be explored and studied probably psychologically, and kind of have his own book. You know, I'm certainly, he's the kind of character who would have loved to see something centered around him, and would have loved to be remembered as a protagonist. But the way he was, the character as he was in the series was a guest character, was a sideline character, was, somewhat comic relief or somewhat, and somewhat just an intriguing character on the side. It is a shame, but I realize also that by the end of the series, Daryl as a character had fulfilled the function that, he'd fulfilled his role in the series. He wasn't so relevant to the core story of what was happening with the rest of the characters, unless he sort of became really involved in the main family of characters of the show. He had really sort of fulfilled everything he could have contributed to the Mallrats storyline. During the latter part of the series, I also had the chance to work as a script editor at Cloud Nine, so I actually had the privilege of seeing ahead to some degree as to what was going to happen to all the characters, and was often sort of being pressured by the other actors. Oh, what's happening next, Joe? What's happening next? And of course, I was trying to be professional and had to tell them, I can't tell you anything. So I was probably one of the first to know that, you know, we were all going to escape on this little boat and make it away from the city and start a new life somewhere else. And I actually, the first time I heard about the boat concept, I wasn't even sure if Daryl was going to make it onto the boat. So when I read that final episode 52, I think, was the final episode, and saw Daryl was on the boat, you know, albeit with very few lines, but at least he got away and could have lived a whole other life, and probably would have, Daryl himself would have wanted a whole other series of books focused on him. But of course, that's just not what the series is about. The series is focused on the Mallrats, and I was aware that Daryl, as interesting a character as he was, he had sort of fulfilled his part in the main sort of storyline arc of Series 5. So it was lovely to be included in the cast, but I had no idea where they were going to take the character. This whole idea of him being a demon dog and sort of embracing that part of him as he went forward with the Mallrats was a really interesting, very different, shocking take. To take on the character who had previously sort of been very much not like what you'd imagine the rest of the Demon Dog gang to be like. So for him to suddenly embrace this new look meant I was starting to think, well, what is this character going through? The whole transition to Daryl's Demon Dog look happened very fast. I was told by the producer that they wanted to embrace a new look for the character, and the costume people suddenly had a whole new thing for me to get ready. I went and had my ear pierced for the new look of the character. I had my hair dyed, and yet there was nothing overtly in the script that references Daryl's new look. So Daryl just sort of turns up looking totally different one day. And I remember that first scene thinking, you know, I guess, you know, we're just going to have to play it that there's a scene that's happened that the audience hasn't seen where everyone suddenly reacts to Daryl's new look, because it certainly wasn't in the script. So another example of how abrupt and fast the whole production of this show could be. But, it, you know, I guess the upside of that is you never know what you're going to get as an audience with this world. And I was kind of honored that they wanted to take Daryl, to give Daryl a sort of a new lease of life as a character and give me a chance to explore a whole other side of him. It boded well for the future, and I thought that Daryl had a long way to go to really come into his own. He had so many different fragments of his past, so many different layers he could have uncovered. But at the same time, I was aware the story wasn't about him. It was about these central Mallrats characters, and Daryl's a bit of a sideshow. So, you know, I would have liked to see Daryl find true love, because for all his, you know, cheesy sleaziness with the ladies, I knew that once Daryl found his true love, that he was the kind of guy that would be true to him. I could see those aspects of him in me. And I could see that what Daryl really needed to, in order to grow up and, you know, put his sort of foolish preconceived notions of women aside, was to have a real woman sort of in his life, loving him for who he was. I think that would have really taken Daryl to the next level. You know, you have to fit in with the rest of the story.
The story of the tribe has continued beyond Series 5 in the form of a series of novels, which also sees some more development for Daryl. Are you aware of the existence of the novels, and have you had a chance to read them at all? What do you think of the books?
I knew that there were tribe books when I first came onto the series. I remember that one of the first times I walked into Cloud9's headquarters in the hut, they have a lobby full of props and memorabilia and and all sorts of tribe merchandise. And I thought, wow, this show has got quite the cult following, especially for quite a low budget show. And I was blown away, and I thought, oh, I got to really read those books someday, which I never have, and I apologize. I have, however, read some interesting fan fiction out there on the internet, and of course, seen some videos and some great, great creative enthusiasm amongst the fans. So, I mean, this is the kind of fan base that the tribe has. The very best fan base you want, really, because when Cloud9 stopped producing this stuff, everyone's doing their best to sort of fill in the blanks and imagine new storylines. As for the, I've never got round to or had the chance to read any of the books written about the time after Series 5, so I knew they were out there, and I knew Daryl was probably in them. And I heard mention of this and that. And I'd certainly be curious to hear more about it. But no, I haven't read the books.
We also ask this because, unfortunately, Daryl is killed in the second book, A New Dawn, in a fight against the Zoodists, alongside Jay and Jell. What's your immediate reaction on hearing of the character's death, if you hadn't already? And if you could have given Daryl any exit, happy or sad, what would that have been?
Yes, I did hear of Daryl's demise, and it was, I can't remember how I heard it. It was over the internet. It was I think it was a YouTube comment. That's how I found out about poor old Daryl. I'd like to, although there was that initial, like, oh my God, well, there goes Daryl. I wasn't overly shocked because as I mentioned before, there was a lot you could. There were a lot of layers to Daryl, but there wasn't a lot more he could do to serve the main characters of the story. So I wasn't surprised that they killed him off. But Daryl, for all his fears and cowardliness, he would have wanted to go out with a bang. He was a showman at heart. And I think once he got to the point where there was something worth fighting for, he would have wanted to go out meaning something. And in fact, when it really comes down to it, Daryl would have wanted to be a hero, to die a hero in the story. So I'm not sure, I haven't read exactly what happened, but hopefully Daryl went out in some kind of heroic fashion, because what Daryl really wanted was to matter and to mean something. And that was his way of connecting with people. If he was clumsy with connecting with people in the here and now, he could at least make up for it by having a legacy. So, I hope that's what happened. I should really hunt down that passage and read it sometime. Maybe you could forward it to me. That would be great.
What was a typical day on the set of the show like? Did you pull any Daryl style pranks?
So a typical day on the set of The Tribe for myself, for Daryl, because Daryl's not in every scene or doesn't have a lot of lines in every scene, there's a lot of waiting around. And on a fast-paced show like The Tribe, they aren't always sure of what scenes they're going to get to in whatever day you have. So you spend a lot of time in the trailer and then all of a sudden have to be quickly summoned to set, and depending on the scene, you have to have a whole lot of energy. And even if the scene isn't a huge emotionally draining scene, you've really got to be there and present and hit all the right marks. Many people outside of show business don't appreciate how hard that is to sit around and go into such low energy mode and then suddenly have to be full energy and present, not just emotionally for the cameras, but thinking about all the different layers of what's going on with your character, what's happened before and after, which is tremendously complicated in a series like this. And hit all your technical marks. You know, you've got all sorts of marks around the set that you have to hit technically for the cameras and for the lights and for the pacing of everybody else. And it only takes one person to not hit their mark and they have to redo the take again in very short amounts of time. On a show like The Tribe, they like to really just do 1 to 3 takes, which is a lot different than a movie where you might do, you know, 10 to 20. And so, yeah, the enormous amount of high pressure to get it right the first, second, or third time. And especially with a character like Daryl, had so much manic energy going on. Oh, and of course, a lot of what the audience doesn't think about, we don't necessarily shoot any of these scenes in orders. As I said, we get the scripts in blocks of 7. And for each block, we actually have a different director. So we cycle around different directors. We do 7 episodes with one director, 7 episodes with another. And so you're not only getting to know how that new director works and thinks about things, but you're also trying to clue them in, and they're trying to clue you in on how they want to approach things. And within the 7 episodes, everything is shot out of order. I mean, it's shot in order as much as they can, but it's all based on the location. So, for instance, you know, Liberty would shoot a whole bunch of the Liberty section of the block of 7 episodes all at once. And that's shot at a place called Whiteman's Valley, which is a kind of very long drive out of town. So on that set, spent huge long days in this little... this village that's been used for as a filming location on a few other shows, because it looks like a little abandoned sort of Western era village. And it was pretty cool to be out there, because as opposed to the set, you know, you could walk up and down this street and the whole place kind of looks like this other world. And of course, all of the inside shots of the set of Liberty were filmed somewhere else, but all of the stuff you see outside those buildings and walking around is us there. So yeah, there'll be lots of fun times on set. I had a great time working with Matt Robinson, who plays Slade, and we became, you know, close buddies throughout the shoot and hung out together even after the shoot was done, before he had to go home back to the UK, where he's from. And of course, I knew Antonia Preble from my work with her on Mirror Mirror. And I also knew Beth Allen from working with her on The Legend of William Tell, where she played Princess Vara and I played Lucien. So it was very much like hanging out with old friends, old schoolmates. It had a very, because of all the young actors, it had a very high school feel about it. So there were lots of hijinks and, you know, lots of shenanigans going on. I tried to stay out of the prank business because, I don't know, I was just sort of like a very, trying to be very professional, I guess, and still new to the whole world. You know, these guys had become so casual over the years. They were such a sort of a family, or, you know, close classmate sort of a feeling amongst them. I was always someone who was just trying to, you know, stay focused and be professional. But these people who'd been working together for years and years on all the other series, you know, were just so comfortable with each other. There were lots of little pranks and shenanigans and hilarious in-jokes kind of going on all the time. Some of which I was kind of like thinking, guys, we got to stay focused. Other times I was thinking, man, I should really just loosen up and be part of this, you know, social scene a little more, instead of trying to be some sort of, you know, consummate professional all the time. But, you know, I was new to the character, new to the environment, and it just wasn't the same experience as these, you know, kids that had grown up with each other. I remember when I was preparing to, you know, come on set for playing Zoot the first time, in the scene where a mouse played by Jacinta is suddenly scared by Daryl playing Zoot. It's in one of the earlier episodes. And I remember in preparation for that, I wanted her to be really as scared of me as possible. So I once I got into makeup as the Zoot character, I didn't go talk to her at all. I had barely got to know her. This is a poor little kid. I feel bad in retrospect, but I didn't go into the trailer, talk to her much or anything like that. Once I was in, once I'd been dressed up, in fact, I avoided her. So she didn't get a chance to see how I looked and didn't get a chance to get comfortable with me until the scene. And then I did my best to really freak her out. And she really screamed a few times and, you know, got mad at me afterwards saying, "Don't scare me like that." But it was cool because, you know, I brought out a very real reaction from her. And she's a very professional kid. She had already worked on a couple of feature films, I think, before Tribe. And she was turned out to be so lovely to work with, a really genuine person. Oh, you can actually see Jacinta featured in King Kong as that scary girl on Skull Island, reaching her hand out to them in warning before they get attacked. She's a real natural. But yeah, the rest of the cast who were, you know, who had been on the show for so many years, they were trying to still make it fun for each other. And they were actually quite mischievous sometimes in doing things to deliberately put each other off being able to perform properly. Just little things like, you know, right before the take, they'd go up and whisper something in the other person's ear to kind of like, you know, jinx them. Something that was a complete psych out. Probably something I can't actually repeat in this interview. And then, you know, director would say an action. And of course, they have to completely kind of try and delete what they've just heard from their mind. So yeah, typical day on the show would be arriving really early, usually really early. Sometimes had to be on set as early as 4:30 for makeup calls because they spend a long time setting up. You usually go straight into wardrobe and get your costume on and then go to the makeup bus and spend, you know, anywhere between 10 minutes to half an hour to an hour, depending on what they have to do. In there. And the makeup bus is a really kind of social scene. You really get to know the makeup artist well. And that's when you have your chit chat. Sometimes that's a good thing. And sometimes it's you don't want to talk much because you're thinking about the scene that you've got to do. Sometimes there'll be a someone who can come in and run lines with you. Usually that was the dialect coach on the tribe. I didn't need much help with the dialect. Because, you know, my accent was kind of naturally this North American one that they wanted. For a lot of the Kiwi actors that had to change their accent, that was very useful for them. But the dialect coaches were very helpful for everyone. Even if it wasn't about the accent, they would come in and just do a general kind of rehearsal. And you'd have to run we'd have to run our lines all the time. Because again, fast turnaround television, you can't afford to mess those up. So you got to nail the lines right. And there were some actors that were really good at improvising. Oh, I completely forgot about Fleur being a new character on Tribe Series 5. She was actually amazing at, when she didn't know her lines, at filling in the blanks. She was an amazing improv actress. One thing, for some weird reason, I kept getting heckled about was my name. You know, Tom Hearn in particular would love to say, "Joseph Crawford," you know, in that voice, you know, like... Because they for some reason they thought my name really sounded like a stage name or a professional actor's name or sort of a name you'd see in the credits, and for some reason that caught on and everyone started saying Joseph Crawford whenever I walked into the room, which is like is you know not the worst thing they could have said. So I learned to appreciate that. Later on, I heard that Tom Hearn had somehow incorporated that whole shtick into some rap song. It was on a behind the scenes videos, but I've never seen it. So yeah. In terms of the day, then after the makeup bus, you'd usually go either straight to set. There's a catering unit, so you can go and get some breakfast and coffee if you've got time. Sometimes if you're doing an early scene, there's just time to have a quick cup of coffee. and then go to set. And man, I drank way too much coffee on the tribe. I got a really horrible, like, instant coffee kind of addiction, because you'd be sitting there and you can just keep going back and getting another one and trying to keep your energy up. And then that would send your energy into a tank. When you finally get to set and you're filming your scene, usually there's what's called a block through. So that's where none of the cameras are rolling. Sometimes there's lighting set up, but sometimes there isn't. It's generally to map out what's going to happen in that space. And so oftentimes you have a lines run, which is just the actors sitting around in the circle running their lines, sort of not acting to the fullest, just kind of getting the rhythm. The director will listen to that and we'll sort of sort out the performances, and then we sort out where the performances are going to happen. So all the marks in the different parts of the room or the set or the area. And we sort of do a block through, which is just sort of like not full acting, just sort of trying to get the positions. And this is so the camera people and lighting crew can go and set things up. And then usually there's a long break while all of that gets set up, and you come back to set and you're ready to go. And usually there's one rehearsal or straight into a take in this case. And you would have to remember exactly what you'd done and really hit the marks with full energy that time. And lots of fun hanging out with the cast in between. We all became close with all the crew members as well. And it was like, you know, sort of one big family. There were some days where I went into, where I was called in, and I would sit around all day with costume and makeup on and, you know, wait for them to get to a scene that I needed to be in at the end of the day. And you'd get to the end of the day and they'd say, oh, sorry, we've run out of time to shoot it. So you'll have to come in again tomorrow or next week or whenever they reschedule that scene to be shot. I had quite a few of those. If it was a scene where you had to put out a lot of energy or summon a lot of energy, that could really mess with your head, because you'd build this all up and then realize it was all for nothing and you'd have to summon it again another day. But that's just, you know, all part of what acting is. Screen actors definitely have it easy in some ways. Theater actors have to summon that same level of energy every night and without the chance to retake it again.
And is there anyone from the cast that you are still in touch with today?
In terms of connections that I've maintained, probably one of my closest buddies from the tribe has been Matt Robinson, who's a really amazing guy. He's also a very talented musician. He was just such a great guy to talk to and such a wonderful, supportive person for me through our work on the tribe. And we definitely bonded over the fact that we're both new to this experience of making the tribe and definitely wanted to help each other out and form. We ended up forming, you know, a great offset kind of friendship that sort of slightly mirrored the friendship of Slade and Daryl on screen. And we often rehearse together. So hopefully that came across. And of course, Antonia Preble is someone I knew from way back when I first started my television career. And she was already, you know, well established and was the lead character on a show called Mirror Mirror 2. Many years back when I was in film school, I asked her to come be part of a short film we were producing as part of our final year projects. And she was such a great sport about it. She was involved in a high profile TV show here in New Zealand called Outrageous Fortune and took time away from her busy life up in Auckland to come down and shoot with a fairly, you know, small crew compared to the level of production she was used to working on. So she's a good sport. As the years go by, she's definitely become one of New Zealand's best young actresses, and her talent just continues to become greater and greater. It's been a long time since I've heard from her or talked to her, but I really wish her all the best. She's amazing. Oh, and interestingly enough, someone who I see around who I didn't work with on Series 5, but who was quite prominent in Series 4, is Dan Weeks, who plays Ved. he's a Wellingtonian, so he's around the same city that I'm in and where we shot The Tribe. And he's still very much into the acting and theater scene. So I see him around from time to time. Definitely a cool guy.
Away from The Tribe, we know that you have had some experience in cinematography. Is this something that you've been actively pursuing, or is it more of an additional skill to add to your resume? For the techies out there, do you have a favorite piece of equipment or lighting setup?
Away from The Tribe, I continued on as an actor for a while, but my interest in filmmaking just started to really dominate the scene. And, you know, since I was a young kid, as you know, I talked about recording vocal stuff and doing plays. But as a teenager, I always ran around with a camera and always had a film in my head or some sort of film experiment planned. And so I definitely heavily got into pursuing a film career, including studying at film school, trying to produce short films, trying to produce music videos and the like. And I've popped in and out of that industry. It's been a long journey. And I've managed to be part of some pretty cool productions. I'm not so much a cinematographer. Those IMDb credits need to be corrected. There's a bunch of stuff that isn't on there, and then a bunch of stuff that probably doesn't reflect what I really do. My main trade is a video editor, and I now work as a freelancer for my own production company and also for a few other places around town. I do things like cut commercial videos for social media and occasionally TV commercials that come along, and try to stay involved as much as I can in the creative scene by producing music videos for local artists, and very much aspire to put out some short films. My camera background is from my work. This is after The Tribe. At a place called Rocket, where we maintain a lot of camera gear, lenses, camera kits, lights for professional shoots and for local productions and productions from overseas that are filming here. So I've got lots of tech experience, and one of the areas I specialized in there is also advising people on their post-production workflow. So at the time when a lot of the new digital workflows were new, like with the RED camera and with a lot of the newer cameras that shot to card and the newer pieces of software that were available, I was helping a lot of productions work out the best way to transfer their footage and edit it on the fly. I've gone through a lot of changes in terms of what software I use for my editing. At this stage, it's Adobe Creative Cloud, which is a collection of creative programs for, you know, design, image editing, audio recording, and video editing, as well as some visual effects and motion graphics stuff you can do. So I mainly work with Adobe Premiere on the video editing side of things, and I'm definitely constantly expanding my skill set and want to kind of be an all-rounder in the area of post-production. I think some of the best directors out there are directors that understand the craft of editing, because then they can shoot their material in such a way that the editor can make the most of it. And editing is as they often say, it's like the final write on something. It's the final revision of something. And it is ultimately responsible for the whole rhythm and emotion that the audience feels in the end. It's a really unnoticed and unappreciated art form out there, but that's good. It's the kind of thing that should go unnoticed to the average audience member. It's like at its highest art form, it's like making a sculpture out of time. That's the way I think of it. Editing is very, very kind of like music in that way.
What are your plans for the future? Are there any new projects that you're involved in? And if there is one thing that you wish you could be doing above all else in a few years' time, what would that be? Is there anything else you would like to say to your fans?
I always am known for being overly ambitious and having too many plans. So, yes, as usual, I have a lot of plans and a lot of things I want to develop. But as I've gotten older, I've learned how to sort of temper them somewhat with more of a realistic expectation of what can be done, so I don't sort of burn myself out trying to go in all directions at once, which is what I have done in the past. There is sort of too much to tell in terms of my story over the last 10 years. Like, for a while I was out of the film industry. I was pursuing my work as a software developer. I came full circle and I came back to editing. Cause I realized it was a passion and there was so much in the creative industry that I still felt so attached to and didn't feel that way or quite on that same level doing software development. So there've been a lot of abrupt changes. At this stage, I'm very much trying to embrace myself as a video editor again. It's not so easy here down in New Zealand to get constant work, so you really have to be constantly putting yourself out there, and that's what I've had to do over the last year to get myself back up and running. So I'm hoping to get further into that field. I mean, the ultimate goal would be to work on feature films. That would be the ultimate goal as a film and video editor. Directing is something I always wanted to do, but you need a certain level of confidence and comfort with yourself and with the way you work with other people that just comes from experience. So I certainly have lots of ideas in my back pocket. I'm constantly sort of developing them, writing notes, trying to write screenplays for projects that I've got in mind. But I've also now got a video production company that I'm putting together to work on things like everything from events, videos, training videos towards all the way up to sort of creative productions with a bigger budget. So in terms of where I'd like to be in a few years' time, I would like to be sort of very well comfortably settled into the industry as an editor and working on possibly feature films, television on a regular basis. I'd love to develop this vocal aspect, like I mentioned before, do some voiceover work, and quietly in the background, I would like to be writing and trying to produce some of my more ambitious creative ideas, and maybe one day get out there as a director. So definitely keep your eye out for me in the next couple of years. I'll be putting up a couple of websites in a few months' time that is to do with my new video production brand, and also possibly my voiceover work. So keep an eye out for that. Not a career level, I'd love to do more traveling. I used to travel a lot as a young person, and somehow I got so settled here trying to make life work here in New Zealand, which is an awesome place, especially the city of Wellington, for in terms of like its size and how many creative people are here and the energy level. It's just amazing. But I would love to see more of the world again when it's the right time. You know, I'm happily settled down. I've been with my girlfriend now for just coming up on 4 years. And, you know, we have a wonderful relationship. She's really been there for me when times have been tough. And it's a case of balancing out, you know, all the comforts of having a great home life with the more ambitious things I'm going to want to do with myself. And this time I want to do it properly and not, you know, overextend myself and end up tying myself in knots, which I have done in the past. I just want to say to all the fans out there that are still, fascinated and interested in this world we created with the tribe, thank you so much. You are you are the best fans any show could ever hope for. The level of creativity, imagination, and absolute loyalty to this idea of the tribe that Ray Thompson came up with, and is just incredible, guys. So, you know, I know that even if there's no more films or TV shows produced and put out there of this fascinating idea, all you tribe fans will definitely be keeping it alive in your minds and putting the stuff out there. And I'm sure that this idea will be continued to be explored in other forms, because it's a fascinating concept. So it's been great to sit down and talk to you guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all the tribe fans who, you know, put up with Daryl over the years and have believed in him or seen the good side in him. It's been lots of fun. And I wish you guys at Tribe Sector 4 and tribe.co.uk all the very best. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you so much, Joseph, for taking time out to participate and respond in our interview. We wish you all the best of luck in your future endeavors. Oh,